Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network, AFR.net. On the internet, American Family Radio, Tim Wildman here with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson. Brother Fred, you there?
I'm here. There we are. Now I can hear me.
Brother Fred and Brother Ed are here.
The Fred and Ed.
With Brother Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Duo.
All right. Thanks for joining us, folks, on this Monday morning. A lot to talk about. Obviously, the Supreme Court nomination of
Amy Coney Barrett.
Yes.
A name you will not forget over the next month.
Three names there. Coney, is Coney her maiden name, Fred?
That is correct.
Okay. She was nominated by the president on Saturday at the White House, and
they named an island after her, didn't they? Before she got island. Married,
I think she's a New Orleans girl.
Yeah,
not a New Yorker, but anyway, Fred, go ahead, brother.
Yeah, a lot going on this weekend, as you mentioned. Amy Coney Barrett was officially announced by the president on Saturday. And here's how it sounded, in case you missed it. Here's cut number one, the president making the announcement.
Now we gather in the Rose Garden to continue our never-ending task of ensuring equal justice and preserving the impartial rule of law. Today it is my honor to nominate one of our nation's most brilliant and gifted legal minds to the Supreme Court. She is a woman of unparalleled achievement, towering intellect, sterling credentials, and unyielding loyalty to the Constitution, Judge Amy Coney Barrett.
So there you have it. That was the announcement. It was quite impressive. I watched it on Saturday afternoon, and of course, it was held in the Rose Garden, and the President and First Lady emerged along with Amy Coney Barrett and her husband, and their seven children. So they all walked out there, and it was very impressive. Of course, most people now know they have seven children. Two of them were adopted, kids from Haiti, and it was a very impressive sight. You know, she's not what I would call a flashy lady. She was dressed very conservatively, but you know, everybody that talks about her, those who taught with her at Notre Dame, they all say she is so impressive. She finished first in her class with her degree at Notre Dame. But one thing for sure we do know, the president wanted a strict constitutionalist. He wanted someone who interpreted the Constitution just as it was written. And she kind of underlined that in her short address to the crowd there on Saturday afternoon. Cut number two.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I am deeply honored by the confidence that you have placed in me. And I am so grateful to you and the First Lady, to the Vice President and the Second Lady, and to so many others here for your kindness on this rather overwhelming occasion. I fully understand that this is a momentous decision for a president. And if the Senate does me the honor of confirming me, I pledge to discharge the responsibilities of this job to the very best of my ability. I love the United States, and I love the United States Constitution.
There you have it. And she also made mention to the crowd that, of course, she clerked for the late Supreme Court Justice Scalia. And his widow was there in the crowd, along with his son, who, of course, is in the administration. And most people believe that she is going to be much like former Justice Scalia in his thinking on the court.
Yeah, and she, of course, she's already a federal judge. Mm-hmm. She was confirmed in October of 2017. She has been serving since that time on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. So there are a lot of conservatives who hope she gets confirmed, who are hoping against hope, I don't know how naive this is, that the Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee and in the Senate will remember that they that she has been confirmed. She's gone through this process already, and but I'm actually just kidding. The Democrats, Tim, as you point out, have already made up their mind. Hearings really don't serve any purpose anymore because the process has been so politicized that your suggestion is they don't even have hearings. They just say, look, we all know how everyone's going to vote. Let's just forget the show.
Yeah.
But she's eminently qualified for any fair-minded person.
Well, I thought I read where Lindsey Graham, the Senate Judiciary Chairman, the Republican from South Carolina, has said he's going to have 3 days of hearings. I read that somewhere. I think that's accurate. And I think that's wise because there's no need to get into some a Kavanaugh-type situation where the Democrats, bring in some guy from Amy's, Coney Barrett's high, maybe when she was 16, and she supposedly kicked him in the groin after football practice, and we want, you know what I'm saying?
Right, like they did to Kavanaugh.
So we want to hear from him,
yeah.
You know, what he experienced there, and everybody should be heard.
I think the only
that kind of thing.
The only tack I think that the Democrats can take is just two realistic ones. I don't think they're going to attack her faith. In fact, Nancy Pelosi said, and she's not in the Senate, but she's a leader in the Democratic Party, that her religious faith should be off limits. I don't think they're going to go after her Catholic background, but they could argue that she is going to overturn Roe versus Wade. I mean, that's one argument they could make. And the second would be, it's kind of becoming a tired argument, but I think that they'll push it, is that this whole process is illegitimate. Therefore, she's illegitimate because the president should wait until after the election. And whoever's president then should fill the seat of Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Now she's kind of already addressed the Roe v. Wade thing. I mean, that it's established, and what would likely happen, everything will go back to the state. But the Democrats on the weekend, guys, were out there with, I think, what will be their strategy, at least one of them, and that they are going to try to plan in the people's mind that President Trump has appointed Amy Coney Barrett because together she will be put on the bench and he will finally do away with the Affordable Care Act. So here's a montage of Democrats over the weekend, people like Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and a few others. And then we have reaction to what they have to say from White House spokesperson Kayleigh McEnany. Here we go. Cut five.
Well, let me say this first and disentangle this issue. One, the president would never ask his nominee to prejudge a case. So he would never ask Amy Coney Barrett or any of his nominees to look at a case and tell him how they would come down. That aside, what I can say about the president and healthcare is his record says it all. When you really dig into this, and I understand the Democrats may not be looking at the president's healthcare record because they want to deny this is the healthcare president. They don't want to bring to light what happened with Obama. The facts bear out that under Obamacare from 2013 to 2017, premiums were going up, drug costs were going up. President Trump comes in 2017 on, premiums come down, drug costs come down for the first time in 50 years. And you had healthcare monopolies in a lot of these states, these exchanges with one single Obamacare plan. President Trump has expanded choice, and he's done this by dismantling Obamacare and bringing us better, more affordable healthcare.
Well, we didn't hear the montage there, but that was Kayleigh McEnany and responding to what the Democrats. And I think that is going to be at least one line of questioning when she goes before the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, just the raw politics of it is she will become the next Supreme Court justice. She will be confirmed, barring something crazy, unforeseen, but she will be confirmed. Dick Durbin, the Democrat senator from Illinois, said as much yesterday on, I think it was ABC's George Stephanopoulos show, another objective journalist by the mainstream media. But he said, basically, Durbin said, we don't have the numbers to stop her from being confirmed. And so And to his credit, Durbin, I'm talking about, he said, I will meet with her and be respectful of her and will ask her questions. And then, so, as he said, I have met with all Supreme Court nominees as long as he's been on the Judiciary Committee. So he's probably the lone voice of reason on the Democrat side. There are several senators who said they're not even going to meet with her. They'll probably boycott the by boycott, I mean no show, the hearings, which is fine. They want to do that. And Dianne Feinstein, interestingly enough, she's the one that's the ranking member on the Senate Judiciary Committee for the Democrats. And she's not as sharp as she once was.
Right.
And so I don't know how that will go in her line of questioning for Barrett. So I fully expect her to be the Supreme Court, next Supreme Court justice to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You know, another thing is here to point out, and it's obvious, I know, but still it needs to be pointed out, and that is this. The Democrats, you know, they make a living off playing identity politics, right? Mm-hmm. Well, but that's really not true. That they really don't favor certain populations having equal opportunity in America. You have to be, it's really an ideological test for the Democrats. For example, Amy Coney Barrett is a white, conservative woman and Christian. So if you look at America, there are, I don't know how many, that category I just described is probably 20, 25% of the American general populace demographic, right? So what's wrong with a conservative woman? White doesn't necessarily matter here, although with the Democrats it does, because right. they have to pick a, like Joe Biden did, I want a black woman to be my VP
right.
pick. So identity politics matters. But it really doesn't, because if you have a woman like Amy Coney Barrett, it matters that she's not a liberal woman.
Right.
Okay. So it's not really, because you would think women's groups would be applauding this nomination by the president and saying, you know what, this is great. We've got another woman on the Supreme Court, and that is something to be lauded and commended by this president. No, they say she is not really a woman. Huh?
Right.
Clarence Thomas is not really a black man. This is how they cancel you out.
If you're conservative.
If you're conservative. So, you see what I'm saying?
Right.
Identity politics only works one way for the Democrats, and that is if you are a liberal person.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, that's absolutely the case. In fact, when you have black conservatives nowadays, they are being called Uncle Toms. They are, you know, not black enough and all those kinds of things, because it does always come down to ideology, even with the identity politics crowd. I would also add that I have never heard a nominee prejudge any case. The answer you always get, rightly so, from those who have been nominated is, I can't tell you how I would vote, because I have to hear the evidence. That's what you're asking of judges. You're asking judges and justices to wait until making a judgment until they hear the evidence. That's their job. We yeah. want them to make decisions based on the Constitution or the text of the law. So I don't think, in terms of the Affordable Care Act, that when Dick Durbin or whoever talks to Amy Coney Barrett and says, you know, are you going to deep six Obamacare? She's going to say, I will wait until a case is presented before me, and I will make the judgment the best I can according to the evidence presented. No, she's not going to say, yeah, first chance I get.
Would we want any other answer, really?
No.
Huh?
I don't think.
Yeah.
From anyone, no matter what their ideology is. Yeah. If you have a liberal who's been nominated for the Supreme Court, and they say, yeah, gun rights, first chance I get, regardless of the case or the evidence, I'm going to vote against the Second Amendment. The left shouldn't want someone like that.
Yeah. Well, I think the dates have been set for the middle of October for the 3 days of hearings.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure she will do fine before the committee, whatever the committee looks like. You know who's on that committee? It could be interesting if she were to try to get into a sparring match with Amy Coney Barrett, and that is Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
She is on that Senate Judiciary Committee. Fred, do you know that?
That is correct. And but you know what? I think Lindsey Graham, the chairman of that committee, was disgusted with the way Kavanaugh was treated. And I don't think Lindsey Graham is going to allow the same kind of rancor to occur. I just think he's going to put a stop to it.
I don't know how he does. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I agree. I think he's going to try to put a
limit. Well, by limiting the number of days,
yes,
one way.
That would be the only way to try to put a lid on that. Once they're given their 5 minutes or whatever, they can pretty much say whatever they want. Although he can publicly call them out, you know, during the hearing. He can say, please maintain decorum at all times. I guess he could do that.
But I think even the Kamala Harris's on that committee, they need to be careful because they're going to be televised.
That's what I'm saying.
The nation is going to see this. Do you want to, as Kamala Harris, be out there just being sharply critical, attacking a female, a woman?
It's risky.
It's risky.
It's risky for the Democrats for the presidential election because Kamala Harris is... she's de facto the presidential candidate here for the Democrats because Joe Biden, even if he were elected, I give him a year max in office before he won't be able to hold up to the duties and responsibilities. So you're really voting Trump versus Harris in the that's the way I see it,
right?
In the presidential election, but yeah, I don't know if it would do Kamala Harris good to maybe it would do good for the base of the Democrat Party, but I don't know if it would serve the campaign, the Biden-Harris ticket, despite what Harris and Biden say. They say the Harris-Biden ticket. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But to get into an ugly sort of match with, first of all, I think she loses Kamala Harris because Amy Coney Barrett is highly intelligent and very articulate and is a constitutional expert, and Kamala Harris is not, okay?
Well, now, she was...
Attorney General.
Right.
She was Attorney General of California. I don't know if she's a constitutional expert or not, so I withdraw that statement, Mr. Chairman.
No, I'm just
but
saying
I would just say,
it would be two lawyers kind of facing off.
Yeah, I know that Amy Coney Barrett is a constitutional expert.
Right.
I don't know that Kamala Harris is. And quite frankly, just the appearance of her going after if it gets ugly, people might say, well, that's not very vice presidential. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there, but she will be confirmed. That's what everybody's saying, even Dick Durbin of Illinois, the Democrat, that she will be the next justice on the Supreme Court to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Should you want to watch on the internet, go to Facebook or YouTube and just type in Today's Issues. Facebook or YouTube, type in Today's Issues, and you can watch our live video stream of the show here. We also post the stories that we discuss and talk about on our Facebook page. Fred, next story.
Well, the other big story coming out of Washington this weekend was the prayer march, which was organized by Franklin Graham. Now,
that was all over the news, too, Fred.
Hey, let me also add this, Fred. Hmm. In conjunction with, or also in addition to Franklin Graham's prayer meeting, there was also the Return was the name of it, which is an event that Jonathan Kahn.
Kahn. Yep.
Kahn. The Harbinger,
yes,
author.
Mm-hmm.
He organized. So,
yes.
So there was some overlap there is what I'm saying.
Tens of thousands. I think the minimum was about 50,000 on the estimate, and some estimated around 400,000. That's quite a gap in there. But I watched some of it online, and I tell you what, it was wall to wall when I was watching it. But organized by Franklin Graham, it was not about politics. It was about praying for this nation. Now, the one Associated Press ran one story, about four sentences. And in that, they managed to say, well, they were there to support Trump. There was another line that says, we didn't see a lot of masks being worn by these people. Nothing to what this was really all about. But Franklin Graham made it very clear in his opening prayer. It's cut number 10, Brent.
And Father, we pray today specifically for the president, Donald J. Trump. Yes. Father, we know that he lost his best friend, his brother, just a few weeks ago. He hasn't even had time to mourn and to grieve. And Father, we know how much he loved his brother. Father, so we just pray that you would comfort him. And today, Father, as he makes an announcement as to who will fill the vacancy on the Supreme Court, Father, give him wisdom to make your choice for our nation and the impact that that can have for years to come.
And there were many that prayed. Tony Perkins was there and many, many others. And it was a prayer march. It was scheduled for about 2 hours as they went from point to point. They prayed for our veterans, prayed for those families who have lost loved ones in the war. It was an absolutely incredible event.
You know, of course, we on this show and others, we talk constantly about politics and culture because that's what we're doing. We're informing. We're equipping. We want our folks, our listeners, to be active in culture and politics. But, Fred, it seems clear to me that something spiritual is going on in this country in a good way. Mm-hmm. We understand something spiritual has been going on in a bad way mm-hmm. for a long time. The enemy has been afoot, and darkness has made plenty of inroads in various communities. And I mean, we all know that side of the ledger. But God has been working too, and there are a lot of people who are praying. There are a lot more Christians who have become aware of what's happening in our country politically mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. culturally. They've been kind of forced to pay attention to the darkness that has been not just creeping in, flooding in. There were those stories a month or so ago where that worship leader was going up and down the coast and thousands of people coming out mm-hmm. to worship God and to pray. So God has been at work. And, of course, we're not surprised that the Associated Press does not cover this event. The secular mainstream media despises Christianity. Mm-hmm. Many of them, not all of them, many of them hate God. Mm-hmm. They hate God's truth. They don't want to cover it. But God doesn't care if the AP is covering what he's doing.
That's right.
He's going to do what he wants to do.
And it's the power of prayer, as Franklin Graham reminded people over and over again. There is power in prayer. And the prayers went up this weekend and will continue to go up for the
right.
for this nation.
Meanwhile, Dr. Fauci says we're not in a good place.
Really? That guy's he's not going to be happy until the last virus dies in America somewhere. In someone's lungs. The last virus dies, then Dr. Fauci's happy.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, we'll return in 2 or 3 minutes. We'll be back.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios in the Morning.
A.B. Coney Barrett is young, and her presence on the court will transform this country for decades to come. Decades! If she should be confirmed, it will change so many things.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. The Memphis City Council is going to consider renaming a stretch of Poplar Avenue to Black Lives Matter Avenue. Council members say it's the only way to recognize the worth of black lives within a society that has historically devalued black life. And the only way to do that is to rename Poplar Avenue. By the way, Poplar Avenue, named after a tree, not a Confederate war general. Critics say it has nothing to do with honoring the black community and everything to do with sticking it to police officers. That's because the city's criminal justice center is located on, you guessed it, Poplar Avenue. Not only that, but Black Lives Matter is a Marxist organization that wants to overthrow our way of life. They may as well name Poplar Avenue Karl Marx Boulevard. And everybody knows that's a dead-end street. Be sure to listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download the free podcast at toddstarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back to the program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. If you want to send us an email, the address is comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. And if you want to download the AFR app, what do they need to do, Ed?
Well, they just simply go to wherever they get their apps, the App Store, I think, for Apple phones, and Brent, what do Android people do? I'm not talking about robotic people, people who have Androids.
I think it's called the Google Store they go to.
The Google Store.
Yes. I'll tell you what.
You caught me.
If your Androids flare up, you might want to go to the doctor. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. They get something that can help you with that.
All right.
So anyway, you get download the AFR app and wherever you may go to do that. And, you know, we had somebody from Massachusetts on Trivia Friday this past week.
Yeah.
Who's listening on the app.
And someone in St. Cloud.
Yeah.
Minnesota, I think. We don't have radio stations in those two places.
Right.
So the app evidently is getting more and more popular across the country. And people, of course, listen to the app around the world to American Family Radio.
Right.
We have international listeners. Well, Fred Jackson's with us. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues. Tomorrow night is the first presidential debate. Right, Fred?
Yep. You didn't see any of Joe Biden on the weekend. They've kind of put what they call the lid on the campaign last Thursday. And they've been trying to get the former vice president ready for what's coming up tomorrow night. There's been a lot of, I think, people in the Democratic Party a little bit nervous about things. Kayleigh McEnany, the White House spokesperson, was on Fox and Friends this morning and saying, you know, President Trump doesn't need a lot of debate prep because he faces questions every day from a very nasty group of reporters. So she says he's ready. Not sure about Joe Biden. Cut number 7.
When he is at that podium taking questions, vicious questions at that, unfair questions from a media that's very biased, when he goes to the plane and he gaggles on the way there and on the way back, he takes more questions than any president in history. He's very transparent, unlike Joe Biden, who really has been hiding away.
Yeah, and that's true. He has been hiding away, basically running the campaign out of the basement. Even some Democrats are getting really worried about the campaign style, but you know, I think this debate is probably going to break some audience records tomorrow night because a lot of people are wondering how President Trump is going to handle things, but even more so, is Joe Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden, going to be able to withstand 90 minutes live television to the nation and the questions coming from Fox anchor Chris Wallace. It's going to be an interesting night.
Ed?
Yeah, I don't think that Joe Biden is going to bomb tomorrow night. I think the bar has been set so low in terms of expectations. Unless there is a complete meltdown, unless he says something completely delusional.
You mean like I went to school at a historically black university?
But that has to be fact checked. Those kinds of mistakes the media will probably not cover for the most part. I'm talking about something, if he says on live television, I want you to reelect President Obama and I, something like that, where people go, wait a second, does he still think he is the vice president? That's the kind of thing that could sink him. I don't think we're going to have that kind of moment. But those kinds of mistakes you're talking about, I think the media will cover for him.
Yeah, as Fred says, you're going to have 6 15-minute segments, and I'm assuming that's 6 different major topics to cover. I would have to say going into this, advantage President Trump because of the reasons that his press secretary,
Kayleigh McEnany,
she just mentioned. You start getting into 5-6 syllable names. Self-admitting here, I just can't do it. But I will say this: that's it. Trump. You know, he's the most accessible president in the history of the country.
Mm-hmm.
The guy loves the back and forth with the media. Okay,
right,
and he's very good at it. I think. He's very good at it. And, of course, he's been in the – and Biden has been in the public eye for a long time, too. But I do think the Democrats are nervous because of the reasons Ed mentioned. There is a possibility in the course of an hour and a half of live national television with Chris Wallace there and President Trump that Biden is going to do and say some things that that are either wildly inaccurate – or gaffes. I mean, it's high risk to me for him in that regard. So we'll see what happens. But
what do you guys think is a risk for President Trump?
Let me add this, and then I'll let Fred answer that question. And I've talked about this before. In the world of sports, let's equate this debate to the world of sports. You have one team going into a championship game against another team, and one team is favored by 3 touchdowns. And the other team gets out there on the field and gives them a fight and hangs around and only loses by 2 touchdowns. Everybody's on the post game going, wow, did you see the that team hang around, man, they gave it a tough fight. Everybody yeah. thought they would be blown out, but look, they held their own for the most part. So it's the low expectations or low bar, as you put it, Ed, that Biden has. So that I'm thinking if he if he does three or four things, he would be declared the winner. A, breathe. Okay.
Right.
B, stand there for an hour and a half. Right. If you've seen him get around, it's not the best right now.
Right.
And standing someplace for an hour and a half. And C, not make a huge gaffe or mistake or something, then or go off, you know, unnecessarily on President Trump, because Trump gets under their skin,
right?
Unlike any human being on earth,
right?
So when somebody gets under your skin, you are apt to lash out,
right?
Right. So Trump lashes out too sometimes. So we'll see what happens, but I'm saying low expectations lead to you don't have to perform very well to be declared at least a draw,
right,
so to speak. Fred, what was your question to Fred?
Yeah, Fred, what do you think is the risk for President Trump?
Well, he's got to keep his cool. If Chris Wallace starts to sound like a Democrat, then the press, we know what the president's like with the media. Like, he starts spitting back fake news, all of that sort of thing. For instance, like in the last 24 hours, New York Times comes out with this story. They say the president didn't pay any taxes for the last 10 or 15 years.
Right.
Now, the president is out there denying this morning. That's not true. In fact, one of his lawyers has said he's paid millions of dollars in taxes. So the president has got to, I think, keep his cool, perhaps not be as snarky as he can be with the media. He's got to be really careful about that. So, but I think he's ready for it. I mean, we already know the topics that Chris Wallace has chosen.
All six?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We already know them. Supreme Court. So we've already heard the arguments about Amy Coney Barrett. COVID-19, we've already heard the arguments from the Democrats saying, you know, Joe Biden has said that President Trump has killed 200,000 plus people.
Right.
No, it's more. He
did say 200 million.
Yeah,
he,
at no, one point, yeah.
He said 200 million.
Yes, that's right.
Has he walked that back?
I'm not sure. I think probably somebody in his campaign, obviously, well, they'd have
staff.
To.
Staff? Where's my staff?
Yeah, that's two-thirds of the staff? Population.
Right.
You know, the other topic, the economy. Well, we all know what's going to happen here. You know, country's best economy going back January, February this year, low unemployment rate. Pandemic occurs. The economy gets shut down, but it's making a recovery. The Democrats are saying, you know, the economy's in terrible shape. So all of these subjects, it's all we've heard that Chris Wallace has chosen. Race and violence in our cities. All of those things, we know what the president's going to say. We know what Vice President Biden is going to say.
This is a tricky area, too, for Vice President Biden, because the Democrats have been slow to criticize the rioters.
Yes.
The
looters. The arsonists.
The people who are protesting in the street. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see how Biden handles that.
Yeah, and I would say this to Fred's point. President Trump. This is the difficulty for President Trump. President Trump is at his best when he acts presidential and also when he doesn't. Okay? In other words, when he's presidential and he is calm and he's doing the speech as it is written, he can sound very impressive. He's also at his best when he's ad-libbing and when he's fiery. He's got to somehow keep both of those poles, both of those things in play without sounding unpresidential and without being, as you put it, Fred, being overly snarky. If Vice President Biden stumbles a little bit as he's talking, President Trump has got to resist the temptation to say, I told you this guy's got dementia. You know what I'm saying? He's got to avoid being vicious. And street fighters can sometimes throw low blows. He's got to avoid doing that. So that's when I think President Trump is at his best. He's got to keep it in those two arenas.
So you don't think President Trump, the first question to Joe Biden is going to be from President Trump, hey, did you pass the drug test?
Right. You can't do. You just can't do that. You got to let you got to
get the big fat shot, Joe. about an hour ago,
it's wearing off, Joe.
Hey, he's got to avoid doing that. That's exactly what I was talking about. Yeah. Because if Joe Biden has dementia, the beginning of dementia, like some people have said, it probably will become evident, and you don't want to pile on because people are going to feel sad.
Roll your eyes? What do you do in response?
I think you just keep your cool. Let the country see that Joe Biden truly has lost his fastball.
Yeah,
and you just let that, and then your campaign can do it. You know, let your campaign staff make that point. If Joe Biden says, you know, I'm sorry, I got to take a break. You know, I got to go to the restroom. President Trump does not need to say something snarky at that point. The whole world will see it.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I think the debate would be over. If that happens,
yeah,
like you just, that scenario, it's over. It's done.
I tell you what, I'm not drinking 2 hours before the debate. Huh?
Yeah.
Find me the one of those guys.
Right. Hour and a half.
Huh? Hour and a half. Wow. With the spotlight on. I think potential for things going really bad for Biden is probably 50% in this. Unless he's been putting on, you know.
Yeah.
Now, I will say this. I think heretofore, to borrow a Friday word, that the Biden campaign have done a – now, I'm not talking about it, whether this is good for the national debate on who will be president or not. Don't misunderstand me. What I'm about to say is commending them for a tactical political calculation that I think has worked so far for them. I'm talking about the Biden campaign. Keep the guy in the basement, all right? Let Trump dig his own grave if he can, if he does. But you just stay quiet. Stay silent for the most part.
No, hardly any interviews.
A campaign stop here and there, maybe like he does when he goes out in the backyard or
goes
to the local high school, you know, and then puts a backdrop like he's campaigning in, you know, Colorado or something. You know what I'm saying? So, and plus with his age and his condition, he doesn't need to be traveling a bunch through time zones and stuff like that back and forth. We've used the analogy before. It's sort of like the team that's got in football, you know, a 3-touchdown lead with, you know, in the fourth quarter. This is the way that the Democrats would think that if you believe the polls,
right?
A 2-touchdown lead, whatever, and all you need to do is hand the ball off and don't fumble,
right?
Just don't blow it. Okay, you've got this thing in the bag. I think the Democrats, if they can get by tomorrow night, that's the biggest hurdle because I think they will cancel then any future debates. If Biden weathers tomorrow night and the polls remain the same, again, if you believe the polls, I know a lot of people don't, that he's going to win because he's got a 8-10 point national lead, then why risk that by doing another debate? I wouldn't do another debate. I would let tomorrow night just hope that he gets through it, right?
Yeah.
As I said, you will have many atheists praying tomorrow night for Biden,
right?
There are many atheists on the Democrat side who will be praying tomorrow night for Biden just to make it through. Please fill in the blank on whatever God they believe in for the night, and then let Biden not just completely collapse in one way or another.
Now, see, that to me is the best strategy. You know, we've kicked around the idea, would there even be any debates? To your point, if Biden does pretty well and defies expectations or whatever comes across as possibly
presidential. It's a wash. Let's just say it's a wash.
It's a wash. Then I think his campaign says, you know what? Now you can get away with saying, I'm not going to. President Trump was so ugly. We covered everything. He was ugly. I'm not going to legitimize this anymore. We've already had a debate. You want to know how?
That would not hurt Biden at all.
No,
so he needs to come. if strategically for Biden tomorrow, just come out with a wash, come out with the, you know, you didn't totally collapse. That's why I would tell Biden answers be tomorrow. You be brief. You don't engage Trump. You just move on. So say, let's move on to the next question, or say, I'm not answering you. President
Chris
Trump.
Wallace is the
Chris
moderator.
Chris is a moderator. I'd say those kinds of things and get away. The question remains to me, if I don't know why Chris Wallace would tip off all six topics. I don't think that's good journalism. That's like, huh? If you want to have a debate, you don't want necessarily both candidates to me to know everything you're going to talk, every question you're going to ask.
But I don't think any of those are a surprise. I mean, you're going to talk about,
for example, is he going to ask him about Hunter Biden tomorrow
night?
Is that already off the table? Because we've already said what the six topics are, so we can't talk about the latest breaking news.
Yeah. Right.
Is he going to ask Trump?
True.
Is he going to ask Trump about you hadn't paid taxes according to the New York Times in X number of years? In other words, if he's going to tip off all six topics and that's all we can talk about, then
that's true.
We're not subject to what's happened since you announced the topics that were going to be covered.
Because the New York Times says the president only paid $750 a year. Trump's lawyer says that's absurd. He's paid millions of dollars every year, federal and state. So which one of those is true? You know,
What about, are we going to cover, and I doubt he will, Chris Wallace, and I don't know how much this matters to the American people, but the FBI, now it's just undeniable that they spied on the Trump campaign and the Trump presidency and tried to disrupt it.
Yeah.
Did you see, and you got 27 cell phones that were swiped, that were cleaned?
The Mueller,
wasn't
the Mueller
right?
team.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
The Mueller lawyers. Yeah.
I don't know if it was all, if it was 27, but it was, it, the team wiped their phones, or they said they were.
And the inspector general was, they're not supposed to do that.
No.
So everything, I don't know, is Chris Wallace going to cover that at all? Does that even matter in a debate?
I don't.
It's not on his list.
Not on the list. Unless he can, you know, kind of branch out on a.
Now, Trump may sort of force it, try to force
yeah.
it.
But he's got to be careful. He doesn't look like he's hectoring,
I know,
Joe Biden, and Biden's acting presidential, saying, listen, Chris Wallace has got the questions. You're not the moderator, Mr. President.
Let me ask you
this. Why don't you tweet it?
Let me ask you this. You got six 15-minute segments, and I guess it's obviously up to Chris Wallace to keep the ball moving.
Right.
You know, keep it interesting and entertaining and watchable. But I just wonder, and it's not like Trump to, or Biden to be, you know, short and pithy.
Right.
Neither one of them.
Right.
Huh? Neither one of them are. But still, I just wonder what if you get through 7 minutes and you go, well, that topic's covered. Let's move on to the other one. What if you got 30 minutes left over at the end of the debate? Do you do push-ups at that point? Because that's what Biden wants to do.
Yeah.
He says, let's do some push-ups.
Let's do push-ups. Oh, that would be embarrassing for both of them.
I would like Chris Wallace to say, Mr. Vice President, what does lying pony face?
Lying dog face pony soldier.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Could you explain that to our...
To the American people.
To the American people, because I think we really want to know.
And was there really a corn pop?
Yeah.
Was there really a guy named Corn Pop?
Huh? And can you show us your degree from Delaware State?
Oh, dear.
Huh? Hey, that happened over the weekend, didn't it, Fred?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, again, Vice President Biden, the former Vice President Biden, when did he make this claim? He got his start at a historically...
Yes, Delaware State.
But he made this claim back during the campaign trail. It wasn't just over the weekend. Mm. It was a film that... It was a video that came forward.
Yes.
Where he was speaking.
I
think it was in 19. He was campaigning. Joe Biden was. And he said he got his start. I wish I had the exact quote. Do you have the exact quote?
I don't. No.
Okay.
Wasn't he at Delaware State speaking? Did I get that right, Fred?
Okay.
And he was saying, I started here, and you're my folks.
It was a historically black college, mm-hmm. and the college had to release a statement saying he did not go to school here.
Right.
He did get an honorary doctorate.
Yes.
From that school. But this is just, again, another, this is what Biden's done for decades. Sometimes he just makes stuff up. He said he was arrested when he was going to visit Nelson Mandela.
Yes.
Back in the few years ago.
Yeah, there's some documents out there. I mean, there's a long string of things that he has said that aren't true. Here's a late one here. It's cut number 8. Biden mentioned something that he did 180 years ago. Cut number 8.
That's why I've made it a priority my entire career to work closely with you. From the time I got to the Senate 180 years ago, you know, as well as my tenure as vice president.
When was this?
This is fairly lately.
When it was
180.
Now, was he joking? Because,
well, he kind of chuckled afterwards.
That's what I'm saying. You know how you say I've been somewhere so long, and then you exaggerate the number.
Yeah,
I'd probably give him a pass on that.
But
one.
Here's the problem: he's made so many.
I know,
of these kinds of statements, you start to scratch your head and you say, "Wow." He said 200 million people have died of COVID.
And didn't,
200 million.
And Americans.
And didn't correct himself.
Right.
No.
So that goes to the cognitive decline argument mm-hmm. that people say about Vice President Biden. Well, it's all on tomorrow night. I think President Trump needs to win, if that's what you want to. I think it would help him a lot.
He needs a bump.
He needs a bump.
He needs a bump in the polls.
Yeah. If you believe the polls, I know a lot of people say, can't believe you cite the polls. Well, what else do we have, really? Huh? The polls may be wrong. They were wrong in 16. But now the pollsters are saying that they've made some adjustments to their surveying that would not make them as susceptible to what happened in 16 as did happen. So, again, I do look at the polls. Daily, I look at the Real Clear Politics polls, and Fred, my Tim adjuster is that whenever I see a poll, I put 3 on to Trump.
Yeah. Speaking of polls, there was an AP North Center poll that came out late last week that we didn't get a chance to talk about. More Americans turning against anti-police protests. Now, this was an AP story they put up. New poll finds percentage of Americans who believe police violence unequally targets Black Americans and that greater consequences for police brutality are necessary have also fallen from June. Basically, I can't read it all here, but the thrust of this across racial lines is that the American people are no longer buying the narrative that we have a nation filled with police who get up every morning and they want to go out and find somebody who has black skin and be brutal to them. That argument is falling apart. Remember,
well, it never was true in the first place.
No, but this is an AP North Center poll that's come out. As I say, across racial lines, even amongst Democrats, the numbers have fallen. So the mood of the country is basically this: we've had enough of the riots. We don't believe the narrative behind them, and we want to move on.
Yeah.
That's bad news for the Democrats.
If they try to hang on to the false narrative.
Yes.
That'll be another topic tomorrow, because Biden's going to try to make the argument that we're a systemically racist nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he believes that.
Nope. And the country doesn't.
It's hard to argue for something passionately that you don't believe in,
right,
or don't, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Or don't understand. All right, Fred, thank you.
You are welcome.
Ed and I'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.